Thank you. Good evening, everybody. My name's Kristen, and I want to welcome you all out to week 9 of our client education series. If this is your first time joining us, don't worry, we're going to have a quick review before we cover tonight's lesson on asset allocation and the introduction to retirement planning. As always, if you have any questions, we encourage you to reach out to the agent who invited you here tonight and start a conversation about getting your finances in order. We have 2 great speakers this evening. Combined, they have over 70 years of experience in the investment industry, so I guarantee you're going to learn some things. First up, from Nashville, Tennessee, here is Roy Matlock Jr.
All right. Thank you, Kristen. And we are going to have a good night tonight. We're going to be talking about money, as we always do. If you're just here for the first time, we do this every single week. And I believe that, you know, with education, what happens is people can make good decisions, and without education, they tend to make bad decisions. And so we believe that, you know, if we can give you great education, it's going to give you a better opportunity to become successful with your money. And so tonight we're going to be going through a lot of stuff. I mean, my biggest complaint I get from people, they say, man, will you just slow down a little bit? You got too much stuff. It's too much stuff. And so we decided what we would do is take the too much stuff, keep that there. But then at the end of whatever we did the previous week, we would review it. And for some of you right now, if you're wondering, have I missed out on it? Well, what we do, we rotate these. There's 12 weeks rotation. We're on week 9. If you want to do a quick catch up, here's what you can do. You can ask the person that sent you the link to send you some of the replay links, and you catch up that way, or you can just keep cruising with us and do things like that. And so, as always, we have this thing organized in a way that I think it's very easy to understand. Now, I've been doing this for 35 years, and then Mike Utes, who will be with me as well. Mike's been doing a lot longer than me. I think 10 more years than I have, maybe 15. And so you've got, we have a wealth of information, a lot of experience to try to help with your money. So tonight, what we're going to do to start with is we are going to do a review. You know, this is our offense series. And what I mean by offense, you know, you've got the offense and you got the defense. And, you know, you start out by creating a great defense. And the defense is, you know, you get rid of all the dumb things that you've got going on in your life, like no budget, not having the right life insurance, you know, and throwing money away on consumer debt and all those kind of things. And so what we want to do is, you know, make sure that we've got those things in place. I'm an emergency fund. You know, wouldn't it have been great if president had come on and said, hey guys, we got this corona thing and we're going to take 3 months off, and everybody just go in your emergency fund, take a little vacation, relax, it'll be okay. And everybody's like, that's cool, I got my 3 months of emergency fund set aside, everything's great. All right. And so for those of you that did it, yeah, you've done that. And then from there, that's the defense. And then we go to the offense. The offense has to do with saving money and accumulating money, investing money, retirement plans, all that kind of stuff. And so tonight we're going to get that done and make that happen. So with that being said, I want to review first off the spectrum of mutual funds and risk. And what that means is when we, last week we talked about, you know, putting your money in the right places. So as you're young and you're getting started and you have a longer timetable, you're probably more engaged in having a more aggressive look at things. And then at the same time, when you're at or near retirement, you're going to back it off. And so inside the spectrum of mutual funds, which a mutual fund is a pool of money, what you have is you have things like money market accounts that can be used for your emergency fund. And then the bond, what a bond is a bond is a loan. And that's where you loan money either to the government, like a savings bond. You can loan it to a municipality. That would be like a tax-free bond. We have a corporate bond. You loan money to a corporation like Exxon. That's called an investment grade bond. Or you would loan it to what we call a high yield bond, junk bond. That would be, you know, big companies, but they're just not the same. Like an airline might be falling in that category, that kind of thing. And so with all that being said, what we have then is we go into our stock funds, and that's growth funds, growth and income funds, international and global funds, and then aggressive growth. So what's the difference? Well, a balanced fund to start with is going to have some stocks and bonds in it. A growth and income fund is going to be big companies. A lot of people buy it so they can have dividends, quarterly dividends, things like that. And so these companies are big companies you've heard of. And what they do is they pay dividends. And a lot of times people use those dividends in order to retire on and just take the quarterly check. We have growth funds. That would be companies that the fund would invest in, like Google or something like that, or Starbucks, things like that. We have international funds. They're outside the U.S. We have global funds, which are all over the world, including the international, inside and outside the U.S. And then we have aggressive growth. That would be the Google of tomorrow, something like that. And so what we do is we go in and we start looking. We say, well, where should you put your money? All right. Well, the first thing you need to understand is the three D's of investing. The first one is a good way to remember this is say dollar cost averaging. You may be doing that right now with your 401k where you're putting it in monthly. And so what dollar cost averaging does is allow you to not be putting all your money in at once and get lucky maybe and buy it on the down or get unlucky and buy it when it's up. So what's happening is every month you're buying in and averaging in. So over a year's time, if you invested each month, you would have an average cost of per share rather than potentially getting unlucky. That kind of thing. The second is discipline. The most important key with investing is to have a discipline plan. You stay there. You never, you're not jumping in, jumping out, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to leave it. We're going to get a plan. We're going to have a discipline. We're going to do it. And then the third thing is diversification. And we're going to get more into detail about that, but you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. You've heard that before. So then what we do, if you're looking right now, maybe you've got a retirement plan at your work, or maybe you have some extra money that has happened, maybe inherited money, maybe you've got a retirement plan from your previous job, and you're sitting there thinking, okay, what makes you different? And what we do, well, we make recommendations, all right? And so when we meet with people, we start going through, and tonight we're really going to talk about recommendations, how we go about doing things, and then give you education on how to go about figuring out what to do. So how do we make recommendations? Well, if you were going to meet with one of our people, the first thing we would want to do is get your balance sheet. And what the balance sheet is your assets and your liabilities. We'd ask you about things like that. You would say, well, I got a house. I said, well, do you have a mortgage? Yeah. Okay, good. Do you have an emergency fund? Yeah, I got $3,000 in that. Okay, that's cool. How about a retirement plan through work? Yeah, I got that. Do you have any previous retirement plans? Yeah. Okay, how about debts outside your mortgage? You have car payment, credit card, anything like that? All right, about how much money you making? All right, cool. And your spouse work? Yeah. How many kids you got? We're going to go in. We're going to look at all this kind of stuff. And then we're going to get a picture. And we're going to see where you're at. And I can immediately look at somebody and say, okay, here's your situation. Then I'm going to take a look at how much time you have. And what I mean by that, how much time before you're going to need to retire? You know, if you're 55 years old, that's different than if you're 35. And so we're going to look at that. We're going to look at some investments and see how much they cost. And we may compare what you have, okay, because fees are important in your investment. So we want to know what's going on there. We're going to look at your risk tolerance. In other words, what can you deal with? And I'm going to get more detail on that a little bit later. But this is kind of a review from last week. And in other words, we want to get you to the point where you don't stay up at night worrying about it. We're going to look at your investment experience. If you're new to the investment world, we're going to treat you differently than if you've been doing it. Then we're going to make some do our research, and we look at our ratings, and then on the different funds, and we create you a portfolio. How about that? So that's what goes into doing things. And so we work to try to do that. We work with experienced portfolio managers. As an example, this is one fund, and these people, this is not a fund recommendation, but this is just an example of what happens. This one fund has got that many people that handle money, that they make the investment decisions. So we go and we get experts, okay, to do that. And they've got years and years and years of experience doing it. Then we'll put your money across geographies, meaning we may invest it, you know, all over the place. Here's one fund that's mostly US, all right, but we put you across, you break it down across all over the world, all right. Then we go into industries, all right, from information technology, communication, healthcare, financials, all these different things. And then they take that money, and then once they do that, they put it into individual companies. In this example, they've got the most they have is in Netflix at 6%. And so you would own a piece of this that's professionally managed. So now we're starting to get a picture of how this goes. We look for high ratings. Okay, there's independent companies, Morningstar is one of them, that rates funds. And we say, well, that's good. We have mutual fund rating companies. We want to get good rated, you know, funds with low expenses that have below average risk. I'd rather, you know, I always tell people, would you rather take a big risk and get a big reward or a small risk and get a big reward? Everybody says, I want small, small risk, big reward. And so we look for companies that have done well, but have done it with below average risk. So now we start, and there's ways of measuring that. And so you start looking, they have things called standard deviation and betas, and you don't need to know all this, but the bottom line is that we want to have something that has less risk and better returns. All right. So you're getting a risk adjusted return that's much better. And so we go into those things and then we put together a portfolio. So what's an example of a portfolio? Here's one, a global growth portfolio. And if you look at it, it's got six or seven funds in there. All of them are individually managed. In this case, it's global. So it's got 68% US equities, 24% non-US equities. So it's like a 70-30 almost split. And just to kind of give you an example, this fund alone has 58,000 millions in it. Okay. Here's a target date fund. Some of you have retirement plans through your work. And what a target date is, I always tell people, hey, pick the target dates. They usually do good. And all you do is take your birth year, add 65 to it. If you plan on retiring at 65, that's going to give you the target date. And then what the funds do is they manage it based on your age. So if you were born in 1960, you would add 65. That would be 2025 target. All right. So you go to your 401k and you say, well, let's make it real simple. Give me the 2025 target. And then what the fund families do, they will manage it based on the fact what you should be doing when you're getting near retirement. So if you were born in 2000, you would have a target 2065. So they're going to be more aggressive. So if we look at this one, this target 2020 has got about 44%. Equities in it, the rest are in bonds. Okay, so bonds are more conservative. Now, if we go to the 2050, though, the 2050 plan has got 84% in equities and only 16% in bonds. You didn't have to do anything. What you did was just pick your date, and then as you get near retirement, they do that. And these target dates will also go 30 years after you're retiring, you start pulling money out, and they put together the best options for you to do things like that. And so that would be something like that. So now how do we buy funds? All right, so let's get into that. If you're going to buy a mutual fund, there's basically three ways if you're going to buy an investment that you can do it. The first one is that you can do it as what's called a no-load fund, and you can do it yourself. There's no fee, front-end fee. It's lowest cost if you have the knowledge, in most cases, and temperament. I say it's lowest cost. Most of the time it is. But, you know, and I tell people, look, there's the reason Home Depot exists is we've got do-it-yourselfers, all right? And the reason that we have backyard mechanics is because we got do-it-yourselfers. I don't care what it is. The reason you do it yourself is because you think, well, I can save some money. Now, the real question is, do you know what you're doing? Now, somebody like me, if I decided I was going to do it myself and try to repair my car, what I would do is I would work on my car for a little bit. Then I'd call a wrecker and I get the wrecker to take it to the shop. Okay. Because I don't know what I'm doing. Right. You know, the biggest do-it-yourselfer thing I've ever seen is that we try to diagnose ourselves. I mean, if you want to look at your symptoms, okay, and then Google it, you don't know what's going to happen. And so I would caution you, if you think you can outperform this, unless you spend a lot of time working and gain the knowledge. But hey, you know what? Most of the time, the people that are sitting on these webinars we do, and they come in our office, they're looking for some help. All right. And they do this. And depending on the size of the investment account, I'm going to show you, you pay a front-end fee through what's called a brokerage commission. It's the next lowest way to purchase if you buy and hold. And what that means is every time you change it, you pay a brokerage commission. So now it doesn't mean if you change it within the fund family. So if you stay within one fund group and you get in a big fund family, which I tell people to do that, you only pay it once. But if you decide, I want to move it from Fidelity to American Funds, and then out of American Funds, I want to move it somewhere else, then you're going to pay a fee and it starts becoming more costly. But if you put it in there, you pay it, and it's a one-time fee up front, and then you do that. And then the other is something called a managed account. And what that is where you just pay a flat fee. You have access to, you can move it anywhere you want to move it. You can get with a broker and then have it across, you know, whatever you want to do, but it's the highest cost, but it gives you more flexibility. And so when we go in here, we meet with people, we kind of get their temperament and, you know, and figure out in the case with dealing with someone like us, we're either going to be in the brokerage side or we're going to be in the managed side. If you're going to do it on your own, obviously you do it on your own, but that's how you go about buying it and doing things like that. And so what we try to do is we try to meet with you. And in meeting with you, we would then turn around and gather data, like I told you earlier, and then we're going to put you into things that fit your temperament, okay, your knowledge base, things like that, and we want to get you to a point where you'll have success, all right? And success is that you leave it in there and be done with it. All funds have expense charges, and most of them, you know, ballpark, if you can get one that's a lower than average expense, like in this case, it shows a 0.65 and an average of 1.09, that's money that goes back to you. And so the way a mutual fund works or a managed account, you take the total return, say it's 10%, and if the expense ratio was 1, you would end up netting 9. And what do those expenses go for? Well, they pay the fund manager to do it, and they also pay people like us a percentage of the value of the account to be there for you and provide you ongoing service. And so as long as you're in the fund, they pay us a small percentage out of that, but it's all out of the, in this case, 0.65. And so what I tell people is investing money, you know, you get to keep about 99% of the money, the gains and stuff like that, and 1%. So it's a pretty low profit zone per fund. But if you get a lot, you know, if you have a lot of money in there, it does matter. And so if you're sitting there and you've got, you know, $1 million in there, a half a point is like $5,000. And so you want to make sure that we try to put you in low cost funds that have a good performance, below average risk, above average returns. That's kind of where we go. And so how does a brokerage account work? Well, let's say that you open one up and you put $50 in. You can open up a mutual fund for $50, that $50 account, they're going to charge you 5.75% once. So that would be how you get started there. But if you have $1 million, you're not going to pay a brokerage fee going in. If you have 100,000, you pay 3.5. So the more money you get in there, the more, the lower your cost. If you go into managed account, on average, it's going to work out to be about 1% typically. If you put your money in there, as a management fee plus the underlying cost of the fund, a total of about 1.7% would be a good number. And so for the 1.7, rather than saying 0.7, you're going to have the ability to move it around. And so that's how fees work. And so with all that being said, what we're going to do now, I'm going to bring up Mike Utes. Mike has been in the business for, I don't know, 40 something years. And Mike is an expert, had a degree in finance, and went out and he's helped literally people. He's got billions of dollars in assets under management. So I'm going to take a quick little stop here. I'm going to turn it over to Mike, and we will get right back to what we're doing. So Mike, come on up.
Thank you, Roy. I appreciate that. You know, I never get tired of listening to Roy Matlock. 30 years of experience in this business, and Roy and I have one thing in common. We both came right out of school and got started in this business at the young age of 21. So we got a lot of experience, but one thing is for sure, we love this business. We put the time in and the expertise in to do everything that we can to help people like yourself. And a couple of things that I would like to add is, the one thing that people will never buy when it goes on sale is a good investment. They love to tell their friends when they get a wonderful deal over the weekend at a garage sale and how inexpensive they got it. But when investments go on sale, somehow people are conditioned to think, I don't want to buy it at that point. So they tend to buy it when it's at an all-time high. Again, that's emotionally buying something that is pretty complex and something you might not know too much about. And your investment advisor should ultimately know you very well. So in the consulting process, I would encourage you, make sure your advisor knows you the best that you can, because ultimately when it comes down to, a big part of our business is psychological, how to educate you the best, how to motivate you the best, how to deal with you when your investment objectives change. And we always build in a lot of flexibility along with those professional fees that Roy mentioned is in those mutual funds, those brokerage accounts. All the dividends that are earned once you get into that account are reinvested at no charge. The dividends end up being a substantial amount of money over your lifetime. Guess what? All the trading profits that are realized at the end of every year that are reinvested in are reinvested at no additional charge. When you're in a fund family and you decide to reallocate your portfolio in one way or your objectives change, all that can be done effectively for no charge. So all the planning that should be done with your advisor, you build on that as time goes on and you get better and better at it and you make better decisions. And you develop a financial roadmap that goes along where you ultimately, you have clarity on where you're going. You understand what you have to work with and you're trying to get there in a straight line as quickly as you could, like a GPS system. And that comes from you and your advisor working together. So in times like this, it's very easy to get emotional, but a lot of strategies can be made. And you will learn in the next section on what happens when we have recessions, which is a periodic thing, and how you could take advantage of it with the right strategy. And as a big part of it is what age you're at, what your personal circumstances are, what your goals are. So ultimately, that becomes a strategy. Remember, there is not an instruction book out there that technically tells us how to handle money. And we generally aren't taught to how to handle money in school. A lot of your experience has come from the school of hard knocks. So it is time for you to get that together, get the right advisor on your team, understand that you have to be in the game to have any chance whatsoever to earn the types of returns that you need to beat inflation, to beat taxes. The idea is to beat both of those by 4% a year. You've got to be in the game. And I'm going to bring Roy Matlock back on, and he's going to show you exactly what happens when you are in the game.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And guys, we are going to now start moving into the new stuff. Okay. And that's the asset allocation side. And I'm going to go through this. You know, I think more than anything, what you got to always remember is, you know, when you want to have your financial affairs in such a way that two things happen. The first thing that happens is that you get the return necessary. And the second thing is that you get a return that you're comfortable with. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you're not too aggressive, but then on the other hand, not too conservative. So let's think about something. You know, we're in a pandemic. And, you know, I started doing this back in the early 80s, and we had the stock market crash of 1987. I just got my license, and then I went through a lot of these different time periods when the markets went down and with the tech crash with 2008. And every time they always said, people said, yeah, but this is different. This is different. This is different. And so I thought I'd give you a little heads up on what's been going on and how the markets operate. Now, and to begin with, businesses will always find ways to go out and create solutions for people. I was telling someone yesterday, you know, the NFL has 32 quarterbacks, 32 teams got 32 quarterbacks, and those 32 quarterbacks are 32 starters come from the entire world, okay, of people that try to play football. So these are pretty sharp cookies when you can be able to be an NFL starting quarterback, be able to do something like that. And so that's why they can, you know, throw a pass, you know, 50 yards to within 6 inches of somebody and with 300 pound people coming after them. And then that's the quarterbacks there. Well, in the business world, the Fortune 500, that's 500 CEOs, all right? And those 500 CEOs, you know what they do? They do the same thing. They're 500 people out of the whole world. Okay, they've been able to do this. And they're pretty good at being able to figure out ways. Just like right now, you know, think about before the pandemic, not that many people knew what Zoom was, and now everybody does. And guess what's happened during that time? Zoom has gone up from $50 a share to as much as $200 a share. So if you were investing in a fund that had some of that Zoom stock, and trust me, there are funds out there, they've done this. But I wanted to show you, we've had SARS, we've had the avian flu, we had the swine flu, we had MERS, I guess is what they call it, Ebola, Zika, and now we got the coronavirus. And in each case, if you look, guess what happened? The markets went down, and then everything came back together and off we went. And so what you want to be able to do is realize that this is the way it is. It works this way. We have markets that do this kind of stuff. And so I want to get you in the proper mindset for investing. So let's talk about some things that you need to do. The first thing you need to understand is market declines are normal. How about that? So don't be surprised. They always happen. Number two, you need to put in place a buy and hold strategy. Number three, we're going to have time, not timing. So we're not going to try to time the market. We're going to just have time in, not timing. We want to keep the proper perspective on things, and I'll talk about that. We're going to diversify our portfolio, and we're going to automate your FIN number. And what is your FIN number? That is your financial independence number. That's the amount of money that you need to accumulate in order to get to a point where you can stop working and never run out of money. And so we want to automate that. So these are six key points that I think you should start with. So let's take a look. How often does the market go down? And this is going all the way back to 1949. So we got 70 years of experience. This is the broad-based market, the S&P 500. So here's what's going to happen. It's going to drop 5% about three times a year. So let me kind of walk you through that. So if you have $1 million in there, you would have declines of $50,000 at least three times a year. How about that? So if you have 100,000, it would be at least 5,000 up or down, you know, during that time. It lasts about 43 days. The last time it happened was February 2020. You get 10% about once a year. It usually recovers within 112 days. If you get 15% or more, it happens about every 3.5 years. And that takes about 262 days to recover. And if it goes down 20%, it takes about 401 days. So if you have a 20% market climb, which we had in February, market takes about 401 days to get all of your money back. So what does that say to you? What it should say to you is this: if I'm investing on a monthly basis, then what's going to happen is that I'm going to have the ability to buy, okay, for 12 months at a discount, because every time I'm buying and the market's down, it takes a year to recover, then I'm buying at a discount, I'm getting a better buy. So market declines are normal. Second thing is buy and hold strategy. There's been studies done. And so, and this is what I always tell people, why do you want to hang out with me with your money? Well, the reason is I'll be there when you may become temporarily insane. Now, what is temporarily insane? You say, yeah, I want to sell it when it's down. I want to buy high and sell low. I think that's a great idea. I think I'm going to market just dropped. I think I'm going to sell it. No, I think everybody has heard buy low, sell high. But for some reason, people, when it emotions kick in, like what Mike said, and then the first thing that happens is you're thinking about getting out of when the market's down. And when the market's down, you don't want to have anything to do with if you have extra money. And so what you have to be realizing is it's always a buy and hold strategy. So let me tell you what that does to people. So the typical individual investor left to their own, all right, lagged the market over the long haul by about 1.8% a year. The average bondholder virtually lost all of their positive returns and trailed the bond market by 4.6%. Compounded over time, what does that mean? So if we go back for 20 years on a $100,000 investment and you take an average equity investor, their $100,000 went to $229,000, but the market was $324,000. So what caused them not to get market returns? The reason is that they made some bad decisions. They sold along the way. They got scared. They did things. Same thing happened with the bond market. The average bond investor would have got $109,000 on a $100,000 investment. Can you imagine that? When they could have got $266,000 if they just leave it alone and leave it to the professionals. So far, what have we said? What we want to do is we want to understand markets go down. We also understand that we need to buy and sell, buy and hold. All right. And, you know, it's interesting how the markets have recovered in a big way, even just recently. So let's talk about time, not timing. Now, this is an interesting one. We go back to the five worst markets since 1929. So what's happening when the market's going down? People are like, I'm out of here. I'm going to cash in. I want to give you this mindset. They say, I want to lock in my losses. And you say, well, wait a minute, why would I want to do that? You know, the market's down. Why would I want to lock in my losses? But that's what they're saying when if you've got money right now and you pulled it out or you're worried about it, that kind of deal, and you pulled it out of the market, then in essence, you're saying, hey, can I lock in my losses? So let me give you an example. If we take the five worst markets, okay, since 1929, returns in the first year, the worst return you got was 36%. The highest was 137%. And the average return the next year over that of the worst markets was 70.95%. So what does that say? If you left it in, you average making 70% when it was coming back. And if you went one step further and bought in, you got a 70% return on your money on average when you went through that. That's from all the way back to 1929 to current. So now let me give you a couple other things. Okay, if you $1,000 invested and you went back 10 years ago, would have grown to $2,897. Now, if you decided, you think, I'm gonna try to time this market, if you miss the 10 best days out of the market. Now, in a 10-year period, you've got 2,500 days, but you were out of the market 10 times. The 10 best days, you lost 33% of your gain. If you missed the 20 best days, you lost 50% of your gain. If you were out 30 days out of how many? 2,500 days, 1,100, you ended up losing 60%. And if you missed 40, you lost basically all of it. You actually went backwards. And so what you want to do is stop trying to time it, just buy, put it in, leave it alone, and forget about it. And what the key element is, we want to make sure that we have a long-term proper perspective. So let me give you another number. If you just leave it alone, the average rate of return in any 10-year period was the mean, which is some above, some below, was 10.4% since 1937. Guys, think about that. 1937, the 10-year return ending 12/31 of 19 was 13.2%. Okay. So what you want to be thinking about is this, I'm going to shut off all of this chatter, the market's up, the market's down. What about Corona? What about the president? What about this? What about that? I'm just shut it off, have a proper perspective and remain calm. And if you have a retirement plan right now, leave it alone. Make sure it's allocated right. We're going to get into that. And then the second thing that you want to do is just keep investing money, stay focused. And guess what? What does 10% mean? Well, 10% means that in about 7 years, your money doubles. So if you could see your money doubling every 7 years, man, can you believe that? That's called the rule of 72, which we've talked about. The next one is automate your FIN. Now, the FIN is your financial independence number. If you have not gotten your financial independence number, then what you need to do is get with whoever invited you and say, I want my FIN. All right. And that's the amount of money they'll take what you have saved so far. They'll take the goal in which you want to retire on based on whatever income it is. We'll run out inflation. We'll put an assumed rate of return in. We'll put an assumed rate of return after you retire. We'll determine how many years you think you're going to live. You say, oh, my mother's not getting ready to be 97. My dad's almost 90. So I have a good gene pool. And I'm going to come up and I'm going to come up with a number. And then what's going to happen is we're going to do what we're supposed to do, which classic saying that's always been in personal finance is pay yourself first. If you make a dollar, guess what you should do? You could save a dime, right? At least save 10% of your money always. Before your paycheck hits your bank account, you should set up a plan, put some of that money into retirement savings. You can't spend it if you've already saved it. And what I mean by that, I tell people when I was coming up, I was always broke because of my investments. I had these drafts hit my checking account. I never had any money left over to go spend because I was just saving it because I had a goal, okay, to be able to get ahead. And so how do you go about doing it? One of the best ways you can do it, if you have a retirement plan through your work right now, you need to take advantage of it. You know, I talk to people, many cases, they have a 6%, maybe they can put 6% in. And then the company says, well, we'll match you 3%. All right. So what does that mean? Well, let me kind of give you the math on this. So you make, put in six and you get three free. So that's a 50% return starting off. And if you put it in your retirement plan, you get to deduct the 6% off your income taxes. So it only costs you four. How about that? So now let's think through this. You put in four and you got nine. So you put in 4% because of your tax deduction. They matched it. So you put in 4% and you got 9%. Okay. And then guess what? Only 60% of the population that's eligible is doing it. I'm like, oh, what is wrong? Okay. If you've got a 401k, guys, you want to be putting that in, put as much as you can in there. Now, when should you not do that? Well, you got to get your defense set up. You got to get rid of some stupid debt, you know, things like that, that you don't need to be having so you can really do it. But the fact of the matter is you need to get busy with your retirement plans through work. Now, let's say your company doesn't offer a retirement plan. Okay. They don't do it. That's fine. You can still save for retirement on your own in an IRA. And we're going to be talking about all the retirement plans next week. So you need to be thinking about that. We're also going to be getting into college savings plans, different ways that you can retire and do things like that. And you want to make it automatic, all right, by setting up recurring deposits from your checking account. So I'm going to give you a little number here. If you start a monthly bank draft, okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have a 95% chance that it's going to continue. So what that says is they've done studies and they say, well, if you put $100 a month into a draft where they take it out of your checking account every month, 95 out of 100 people that started are going to end up having continue to do it. Yet only 20% of the people that say they're going to do it at the end of the year, or mail it in or something like that. So what you want to do is you want to automate it to where your FIN is in place. So here's what happens. You get your FIN number and your FIN number is $860 a month. All you have to do to know that you're going to be able to quit one day is have $860 a month, either put in there through your retirement plan, through your work and the matching funds or on your own, whatever that number is. So what you want to do is think about, let's get my FIN, okay, automated. All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to start going into asset allocation. And what asset allocation is it involves dividing your investments among different assets, stocks, bonds, and cash. Asset allocation decisions, a personal one, The allocation that works best for you changes at different times in your life, depending on how long you have to invest and your ability to tolerate risks. So what we do is we talk to people, we kind of get an idea of where they're at, and we work on getting their asset allocation to work right around that. So how do we create an asset allocation model? What we do is there's five keys to it: the time horizon, the risk, diversification, investment choices, and then the rebalancing of your money. So what we're going to do now is we're going to start, and this is going to help you more than anything in terms of choosing your 401k. And I always tell my clients, I said, look, if you want me to help you with your 401k, there's no cost for us to teach you and to look at your choices. And I'll make some recommendations for you that you can do with your 401k, even though we're not handling the money, we'll teach you that. And this is part of what I'm doing right now. And so let's talk about the time horizon. It's the number of months, years, or decades you need to invest to achieve your financial goal. So investors with a longer term horizon can take on more risks. They may feel more comfortable and more volatile investments. The shorter time horizon may prefer to take on less risk. I had a lady I spoke with today, and I told her, I said, you know, you've won. They've got their house paid off. They have plenty of money. I said, you've won. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to back off the risk, because once financially independent, we don't want to get not independent, right? The next thing we look at is something called risk tolerance and risk capacity. Now, this is kind of an interesting one that most people don't really understand. And so I'm going to explain this. Risk tolerance, okay, is about your willingness and your ability and willingness to lose some or all of your original investment in order to get a better rate of return. So, you know, I have people all the time, they say, well, I think I'm going to put my money in individual stocks. I'm like, so what do you really want to do? You really want to lose some money? I mean, are you just hell bent on losing money? So if you are, that's fine. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is that what you want to do is you want to get something that you don't want to lose your money. You want to go and you want to put yourself in a position that it falls in line with the way you feel about things and what you need to do. Your risk capacity is an entirely different thing. Unlike tolerance, it's the amount of risk that you must take in order to reach your goals. So let me give you an example of what I mean by that. If you make an average income and you want a normal retirement, and you think that you can take your money to the bank because it's very safe and you're getting 0.1%, the rate of return is not big enough for you to reach your goals. All right. So what you have to do is you got to say, look, I have no choice but to get a risk capacity. Okay. And it may not be right on my tolerance level. I may be a little uncomfortable with it, but it's the only way I can get to where I want to be when it comes to my goals. So that's the second thing that we do. So then what we do is we diversify. So let me give you a quick example. What do umbrellas and sunglasses have to do with each other? All right, let's take a look at this. Well, if you're going down the street and you're maybe at the beach or something like that, and you see these people that they've got these little vendors and they're selling stuff, and they sell unrelated products such as umbrellas and sunglasses, you may say, now wait a minute. Okay, initially that's odd. Why would they do that? Okay, but by selling both items, they're diversifying their product line. The vendor can reduce the risk of losing money on any given day. So let me give an example. If it's sunny, guess what? They're not selling umbrellas more than likely. If it's raining, okay, they're not selling sunglasses. And so investors, okay, have been told for many, many years, all right, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? We've heard this. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And it's the central thesis of what the concept of diversification is. It's a management strategy of your money that blends different investments into a single portfolio. The idea is that we're going to diversify. Another thing you could say is we're going to be happy all the time about something. It says that we're going to reduce the risk by investing in different vehicles and potentially not only reduce the risk, but also raise the return. Okay? So that's a pretty cool way. Think of that. So now we're going to make some investment choices. We can be aggressive, and that's going to be generally speaking. Now keep in mind, no person is the same, and that's why you got to get with somebody to let them help you with that. But generally, people that have aggressive behaviors on their investment choices have a longer time horizon, and aggressive means they would have more stocks then they would have bonds. All right. So if you're wondering what a bond is, more conservative, a stock is more aggressive. So if you're buying funds in that allocation we talked about, then what you would do is you would be thinking about, okay, if I'm going to be more aggressive, I'm going to be at the top of that list. If I'm going to be more conservative, I'm going to be going down the middle, down to the middle or below, and do that. The moderate portfolio might be for investors that want medium risk. Maybe they're 50 years old, 55 years old. They're thinking they're going to work. They're moving into that, you know, last 10 years. They've accumulated some money. They don't want to lose money, but at the same time, they don't want to totally take it off the table. So they want to have a little bit less stock or a little more stock than bond, but not a lot more. Then the last group are the people that have lower risk tolerance. Maybe they are retired and they may even have a lower percentage of stocks than bonds, or maybe 50-50, called a balance fund. And so that's gets you kind of in that. So this would be an example. If we were looking, we said, well, here is an aggressive portfolio. All right, we got 20% in bonds and the rest, we got stocks and foreign stocks. We've got large companies, small companies. A moderate might be 45% in bonds, okay, and the rest in 55 in stocks. And if you go conservative, you might only have 30% in stocks and 70% in bonds. And so that's how you go about doing that. And so how do you determine that? Well, we go back to all those things that we do to try to get you to a point where you understand, you know, the things that go into it. How much time do you have? How much experience have you had? You know, things like that. I had a lady not too long ago. She had $100,000 and she came to me. It's coming out of the bank. She never invested money. I put her in very, 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 very conservative things to get her started. And the cool thing about it was she called me up. She said, "What happened to my money with the market?" I said, "It was very unaffected because what we had done, you know, I knew, and I did it because I didn't want to have somebody brand new get in a situation like that." And so sometimes we'll do things called dollar cost averaging in, where you bring $100,000, you say, "I got $100,000. And I said, "Well, let's just put it into a money market account. And over the next year, we'll put $10,000 a month in and ease it in. So if the market's going down, we'll be in a position to do something like that." So anyway, that's what that is. I'll give you one other little thing you think about. It's called target date. I call it autopilot, your asset allocation. A target date fund, if you're at your work, go back to that target date I talked about, where when you're young and you got a long ways out, you would have that target of 65 plus your birthday, however it is. They're going to automatically be more aggressive. If you look right here, what you've got is that you've got funds that actually get more conservative as you get near retirement. And then once you've retired, they'll even do it out that way. And most all of your 401ks will have the choice to do something like that. And so then the last thing that we're going to talk about is rebalancing. Rebalancing is what you do to bring your portfolio back to the original asset allocation model. So let's say that you right now you had your money, you thought 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds. All right, let's just say that. And the stock market really went up. And now without you even knowing it, you've got 70% in stocks and 30% in bonds. And so rebalancing will allow you, what you would do is you'd say, okay, I'm going to take my money. I got 100 grand here. I want 60-40. I've got 70-30. I'm going to move 10,000 out to my bond market, bond account, and bond portfolio. So now what I've got is I've got 60 in stock and 40 in bonds. Now, why is this important? Because you don't want to get out of whack, right? You don't want to unknowingly have the majority of your money in things and become very aggressive or very conservative. And so if you start, like I was saying, 60% of your portfolio in stocks, you see it rise to 80 to reestablish the original asset allocation, you would need to sell some of it or invest in other categories. So what we do is we do that. And when I meet with people, I like to do automatic portfolio rebalancing. We can do that to where if you're going to go in there and be 60%, you're always going to be 60%. And we have funds that do that. So you never get caught with way too much money in one place or in the other place. And so with that being said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Mike. Mike's going to do a quick little recap. And then once we do that, I'm going to come back and we're going to close it out. So Mike, it's all yours there, buddy.
Thank you, Roy. Nothing like getting you focused on what you have to do ahead. And one of the things that we always have to be aware of is what could possibly keep us from accomplishing our goals. And this is always around because it's historical. And I'm talking about inflation. Advisors are always talking about inflation, but a lot of people take that for granted and they aren't aware that that's important in every financial plan and every financial decision that you make. And inflation is nothing more than compounded interest. Just like the earnings of your money, inflation works against it. How much does your money shrink every year? Today, oftentimes inflation's being talked at in the area of 3%. There are times that it goes higher, there are times that it goes lower, but you have to be aware that it's occurring and it's part of your overall plan. Inflation's like fire. You know, fire, if you have it under control, it can be your best friend. If you don't have it under control, it can be a foe. In other words, it can help you or it can destroy you. When you have control of fire, it can warm your house, it can cook for you. But if you lose control of it, it can burn your house down, burn your assets down. And that is one reason why proven investments managed by proven portfolio managers will never go out of style and why people always need it, because it's considered a great hedge against inflation, if not the best. And why is that? Many times I will ask people, I'll say, you know, what do you think is the most valuable piece of property right here in your city? And they'll lean back and they'll think about it for a little bit. And normally they'll pick a piece of property downtown. They're normally thinking of some raw land or the tallest office building downtown. And they'll think that's the most valuable piece of property. But the most valuable piece of property really, in reality, is what is the largest business in your town? Now, if you live in California, Apple Computer might be the most valuable piece of property because a business encompasses everything. You have plants, you have equipment, you have machinery, you have personnel. You have executive experience, you have patents, you have all these things that cost more to replace every year working for you. And the replacement value of that is like your home and other pieces of property, it goes up. And then also you have increased earnings that comes out of that every year. And that is why equity investments are considered the greatest hedge or one of the greatest hedges of your investments over the years. I also love that idea about automating your FIN number. I love to get the husband and wife together and get a goal put together on paper on what their plans are, get them to agree upon it, because to accomplish this, it's oftentimes a team goal. Even as the kids get older, you can get them to participate. Because let's say one of the two of you, the husband or the spouse, steps forward and they want to take a vacation or they want to spend money on something that is not in the plan. The other person can say, well, honey, that's all right. We could do that. But are we willing to sacrifice this part of our plan right now? Bringing it back to something that you committed and the discipline that you need to accomplish whatever happens to you. So the plan gives you an objective discussion on how to move forward. Now, in addition to this, we talked about the value of the 401k, the IRAs, the tax deductibility, and how much money you're adding there. Your advisor will help you personally on that. Many of the investments in those 401k plans are something that your advisor is familiar with. He can help you with how that portfolio is structured. Even though you're doing that through your employer, because again, he's wanting to help you for the long haul and everything ties in together. So I hope those words will help you accomplish your goals. And I'm going to turn it back over to Roy Matlock for some finishing words.
All right, guys. Thank you, Mike. And we're going to close out with this. And I really want to compliment all of you on being here because, you know, this is what happens. If you want to get ahead, that's what you do. You do things to help yourself get ahead. So I want to do two things real quick. First off, next week, we're going to do retirement plans and college savings plans. And so that'll be something really exciting for you. And if you're, you know, you may have kids, grandkids, stuff like that, we're going to get into all the details of that kind of thing. And then lastly, I want to thank you for attending. We can help you. That's what we do. What we cover tonight is what we do for people. And reach out to that person that invited you, get them to walk you through, you know, how to get your own personal finances straight. Secondly, this person invited you, if you liked what you saw, that link that you were sent, you can forward that out and to maybe friends and family and stuff like that and get them registered for next week. Wouldn't it be great to have all your family, okay, to get their finances straight? And then we're getting ready to start up in just a few minutes, actually just about 3 minutes, and we're going to be having another webinar. It's called Join Our Team. We're always looking for people that are looking for a work from home solution, helping people with their money. You know, it works. You're on here. We have people on here every week that, that take a look at what we do. And so ask that person right now, say, hey, send me that link if they hadn't already done that, and they can send that to you, and you can get in on this next, it's about 45 minutes. We'll teach you about how you could possibly turn this into something as a sideline as well. So with that, guys, hope you enjoyed tonight. Hope you learned something, and be back with us next week. Thank you.